This is the deploying the IETF's WHOIS replacement in Constellation Room on Thursday, October 16th, 2014, and this session will run from 10:30 to 11:45 local time.
Hello everyone, we are about to start. We have a lot of space here in the front. If you'd like to join us here, you're more than welcome. Hi, this is Francisco Arias, Director of Technical Services within the Global Domains Division at ICANN. To my left, I have Murray. I'm unfortunately unable to tell your last name. I apologize for that. Murray is the co-chair of the IETF working group developing the RDAP protocol, which is intended to be the replacement of the WHOIS protocol. We are going to give an update on where are things in the IETF and what will be the next steps here at ICANN to a future migration to this protocol. So let's start. This is the agenda for today. So a brief introduction, why we are here on this stage talking about migrating from the WHOIS protocol. This is the what other people call the Port 43 protocol. In 2010, there were a series of discussions with the community on, once again, I should say, because this has been a a topic that has come and gone several times. But this time the Ford, I think, went in a good track. And in 2011, the ESAC, the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, published an advisory, SAC 51, that called for ICANN to work with the community to evaluate and adopt a replacement for the Port 43 WHOIS protocol. That was adopted by the ICANN board in a resolution later in 2011, in which the board instructed staff to work on developing a roadmap to, among other things, and the main thing, to replace the WHOIS protocol. We published a draft of this roadmap, and we have some interactions with the community. And finally, in June 2012, the final roadmap was published and described things like a potential need for a PDP, but also at the same time working in parallel with contract negotiations with registries and registrars that were willing to, excuse me, to adopt contractual provisions in this regard. And that's what happened. VeriSign was the first for .com when the renewal was up in 2012. They agreed to have a provision in their contract to implement the protocol once it's ready and also to work in their development. Same happened with .name, Peace, Info, and Org. And we also have contractual provisions in the 2012 register agreement, that's the new TLDs agreement. And also for the 2013 registry accreditation agreement, registrars also have a clause in their contracts to implement this protocol once it's standardized by the ITF. So in that regard, the ITF started a working group in 2012 to develop this protocol, and now they are close to finish, and that's why what Moore is going to talk about later. The RFCs are expected in the next few months. So this replacement of WHOIS is called RDAP, Registration Data Access Protocol. It is, as I said, intended to replace the Port 43 protocol. It provides flexibility in supporting various policies, contrary to what we have with Port 43. It doesn't mean you have to implement the different options that the protocol allows you to do. It gives you the option to turn it on or off as needed according to the policy in the TLD. It is already operating in production for at least a couple of the regional internet registries. These are the IP registries, as they are called. We have ARIN and RIPE NCC, ARIN in North America, RIPE NCC in Europe, that have both production implementations. And I think the rest of the RIRs have at least pilot implementations. So this is something that is real, already working. So it provides many benefits that, which Moore is going to talk in detail later. And of course, it was designed now with the current knowledge of this industry, as opposed to the old WHOIS protocol that was designed a long time ago with a very different reality back then. So, Moore.
Good morning. Murray Kucharavi. I co-chair the WIRDS working group, which is the working group that's been developing RDAP for a while now. Well, I'll give you, toward the end, I'll give you some status on where we're at. But essentially the problem with WHOIS, as it was presented to us, is that it is effectively unformatted. Our registry is able to return data in any form it wants, with or without fields that it thinks you might want to see or that it should show you. It's completely ad hoc. It's unauthenticated, which means pretty basically all queries are anonymous. The only way I can tell one client from another is by IP address, and with the advent of NAT, even that's not guaranteed that there's the same query is coming from this. Two queries are coming from the same place. It's ASCII only. There's no support for internationalization in Port 43, as we've heard. We heard in the earlier session, and it's completely insecure. The protocol has no provisions whatsoever for secrecy. Right. I'm sorry. I should have rolled through these rather than covering them all. But one of the problems with unauthenticated clients is that it is impossible to give preferential service over from one client over another. So if we have a query coming from a random person on the net who's interested in scraping details like email addresses for spammers, I can't tell that from a law enforcement query where I should be giving everything as quickly as possible. It's not possible to do reasonable rate limiting. It's not possible to do many defensive things that are simply not possible if you can't identify one client from the next. Covered this piece. It's about to fall. Also, Whois has no defined extension strategy whatsoever. Sometimes the query supports wildcard searches. Sometimes they support ways to do prefix searching. None of this is standardized. When you're talking to one registry or the next, you have no idea a priori if they're going to support a search query. So you might get back completely unexpected results if you try something like that. An interloper can not only see what you're asking about, but see what the answer is. So if someone can man in the middle of you because they can't get the information, they can just listen to your connection until you can get it. Especially for law enforcement queries where extra data would normally be provided, this is obviously not a preferable situation. So previously, Whois actually has its origins in the late 1970s, which is not what you would expect given the RFC number that it has, but that's only because the protocol was never actually written down anywhere until RFC 3912. In 94, we tried to introduce something called RWhois, which was more of a hierarchical lookup structure, sort of mirroring the way the DNS works. But the uptake for this was unfortunately weak, so there are still some clients, maybe a couple of servers out there, but it is not universally deployed. The IETF tried to take another run at this in 2005 with the CRISP working group producing something called IRIS that tried to be all things to all people. And in doing so, it unfortunately became extremely complex, and uptake for it was... We saw, I think, one open source implementation that didn't really get very far, and it basically has fallen aside. So in 2011, we were approached by some ICANN staffers, and at the time I was working for an email security company, so we were particularly interested in solving the Whois problem. There's information that security companies would like to get out of Whois that they simply can't get the way things are right now. And so ICANN staffers approached Aaron to talk about what if they had any ideas for a new solution. And we started up the new effort using the original requirement set for IRIS, which we thought was a reasonably good requirement set. So this was the basis for our work, but set the protocol aside and basically start again from there. We formed the WEIRDS working group, which is a fun name to say, but it actually does stand for something useful. There was a Birds of a Feather session in spring of 2012. The working group actually started up right after that because it was clear there was a lot of interest. It took us a while to get started because we were worried that the RIRs already had prototypes for this, but we weren't sure that the prototypes that they had built would actually work for the domain namespace. After a lot of internal discussions and non-believers and so forth saying, no, we have to go two separate ways, we eventually decided that we could actually do one unified solution, and that's what became RDAP. So the fundamentals of RDAP. The transport is HTTP, which provides us huge advantages. There's a lot of deployed open source web code, both clients and servers. There's essentially a very widely developed and deployed infrastructure for the web. I mean, this is shouldn't be a surprise to anyone in this room. There are already capabilities for security and authentication, which solve some of the requirements we mentioned earlier. I can now differentiate one client from another. I can identify and then have a table of, for these clients, I want to give unlimited rate queries, or for anonymous clients, I only want to do a certain number per hour or what have you, now that I can tell them apart. HTTP already has support for encryption, so I can you can hide the question and the answer inside of a connection, and this solves this requirement. HTTP already has supports for redirects, so if a question lands at a server that doesn't know the answer but it knows the right place, it can just simply issue an HTTP redirect. The protocol itself does not need extra provisions for redirects. Replies are going to be JSON formatted. JSON already supports UTF-8, so that satisfies the need for internationalization. Transliteration, I'm not familiar with how that works. That sounds more like a policy effort that's going on right now. So, okay. If I stray away from technology into policy, then I begin to speak gibberish, so I'll try not to do that. Internationalized domain names are supported in both the question and the answer. Work that predated the RDAP development nicely sets a framework for us to do this sort of work without having to develop anything new, which those two things together basically satisfy all of our internationalization requirements. The most interesting piece of this lately has been how do we figure out where to send the query. If you have a domain name, you need to make an RDAP query. Where does the registry live for .com or .co.uk or anything like that? And the solution is that IANA will begin maintaining a bootstrap registry for each of the three types that we have: network blocks, autonomous system numbers, and domains. The registry will be published in JSON and will essentially, it's our vision that it will essentially become a part of the registration process. So when a new TLD is created, an entry would go in this registry that will say, for that new TLD, you can issue queries to this location. And the bootstrap protocol explains how to assemble a query based on what's in the registry. Essentially, this is like the DNS root cache. That's a file you download once in a while. It doesn't change very often, only when a new TLD is introduced or when a new TLD server needs to be introduced. And for some period of time, you just continue using that bootstrap file until there's a need to do another one. And again, this HTTP already has support for redirects. So if you could, in theory, have one server to which you point all RDAP queries, and as long as it knows the right bootstrap details, it can redirect things as needed. There's also a registry not only for where TLDs or AS ranges or networks go, but there is a separate IANA-maintained registry for the fields that can be returned and what would go in them and what syntax they have. So this satisfies the need for extensible field sets. So some new data element you want to be able to report via Whois, you would just add it to the registry, and then clients can learn how to process this new piece of information. And our documents create the field name registry and define what all the current fields we are. There was an extensive survey taken of all the, I don't know about all, but many, a very large number of the Whois registries that we knew about, and find what fields do they typically return. And so we have this very extensive research about that, and we're creating a first set of fields based on what we found. So there's at least feature parity with what's out there now. The protocol supports the notion of basic search. It defines a syntax for how you would issue a search query. It does not require that servers implement this. There is a way to say back, we don't support search queries, or we don't support this type of search query. Again, for feature parity, we want to be able to support servers that currently provide search capabilities, but we don't want to force it on anyone that is not able to or does not wish to. So current implementation status. You just need a basic HTTP client to issue a query and receive a reply. ICANN has partnered with CNNIC to produce an open source implementation, and the URL is here for where you can have a look at that work. I haven't checked lately on how far they've gotten. Aaron has had an implementation for this for some time for querying network numbers and I believe AS numbers. Some time ago, they noticed that the number of queries to the new service, to RDAP, has far surpassed the number of queries they're getting to port 43. So they're, I don't want to put words in Aaron's mouth, but I think they're heading toward being prepared to turn off port 43 altogether in favor of the new work. Several of the other RIRs have either prototypes or are in private betas. RIPE NCC has their own, and VeriSign and Afilias are doing proof of concept work for the domain name registry side of things. So where are the specifications? There are six documents that are currently in IETF last call. I think the next slide goes into a little more detail about timeline. The six of them are these. The object inventory just describes our Whois research, what led us to the first set of fields. One describes how to do RDAP over HTTP, and things like authentication are accomplished this way and so forth. The query format is how to form the question based on the question that you want to ask and how to do searches as well. There's one entire document dedicated to security considerations for if you need to secure it, here's the way to secure it. If you need to authenticate your queries or you want to force authentication, here's how you do that, issues of that nature. How to form a response using JSON once you've retrieved the data from your backend, and then the bootstrapping piece, the part that will be managed by IANA. The URL here contains links to all the current documents and shows their status. You'll see them all in last call. now and show the last call dates and the telechat date. So the last call will end on the 24th for all documents except Bootstrap, which ends on the 27th. A few days later, they go into IESG review, which is the last of our formal review processes. That's where the Internet Engineering Steering Group will have an opportunity to look at it, comment on it, request or insist on certain changes. Assuming nothing serious happens there, it will go into the RFC editor queue pretty much right away, where lately they've been taking about a month to do it. So I would guess early December, unless something serious comes up, in which case, you know, the end of December is more likely. But I would be very surprised if this goes beyond the end of the year. And it's important to note, I think, that RDAP plays an important role in addressing the ICANN EWG Directory Services recommendations. I think that was my last slide. Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Murray. So now, now that the work in the IDF is about to finish, now we need to close the loop on what started a few years ago and see how we can move to implementation here in ICANN. So just want to reiterate the difference. This is a simplified anatomy of the WHOIS protocol. We have at the top the policy, which is perhaps where most of the force are usually here within ICANN. We have the data that is transported that sometimes we also carry in ICANN and define what is what should be passed through the in WHOIS. And finally, at the lower level, we have the protocol, which is something that usually at ICANN we don't pay too much attention. We just use whatever is there that is standardized by the ITF. And here is where the change is coming. This is only on the protocol. Provide a baseline that can be used to implement whatever policies may come up in the future. So there are different initiatives within ICANN, for example, the translation, transliteration, policy development process that is working on in having internationalized data inside the registration data or the WHOIS, let's say, to use the term that most people know. However, in order to do that, you need a protocol that supports that, and that's where you need something like RDAP in order to be able to do that. And then we have the EWG, which is still in a even a earlier stage that may come back as one big PDP or maybe several PDPs, who knows, but also builds on certain capabilities that need to be there in order for people to be able to have the services that are desired. So I just wanted to give you the message. This is about the protocol, the lower layer in the WHOIS services that we are talking about in this session. So as Murray explained, RDAP provides or enables this a short summary of the capabilities that are there. We have. I want to reiterate also that there are some things here, like differentiated access, that we may or may not have already an agreement within ICANN on whether this has to be there or not. The thing with the RDAP protocol, just because the protocol has that capability doesn't mean that you have to implement it. You implement it once, and if there is a policy that says you have to do it. Same goes with internationalization, searchability, etc. So you have the capabilities there ready to use once there is a policy that says you must or you should or you may use that. And finally, this is, as Fabian mentioned in the session previous, the TIC-WHOIS session, this is an incremental step forward in the long term view that is described in the EWG report. So this is at this point we don't have any concrete plan or the intention of this session is more about discussing what should we do next. This is a high level view of what could be happening here. First, we of course need to have the protocol to be published as a standard by the IETF, then we need to have implementations available, for which, as Morab explained, there are already at least two open source implementations that, and at least one of those is already being used in production. So they are already implementations available that people can download and start playing with. And once the protocol is finalized and all the features that the final implementation describes are there, then we can consider them for a production environment within ICANN. Then there is a detail that a set of other details that may need to be defined. We were using the term operational profile. We need to define certain parameters or certain configurations on the RDAP protocol, what features should be turned on or what features should not, and so on and so forth. So we need to have a discussion and agreement on what is that need to be in the implementation that is used by ETLD registries and registrars. And then, of course, we need to have a timeline for deployment of this new protocol. And finally, we need to start talking also about when will be wise to turn off port 43 service. I have no suggestions here. It's just raising the questions for discussion. And there are more questions here. So there is currently an opportunity for synchronizing implementation of two things that are in a similar timeline. I don't know if the audience here is familiar. We started doing, let's say, packaging or synchronizing the implementation timeline for things related to WHIS. Last summer, we started with the first iteration of this. We defined a six-month implementation timeline, and we included the things that were ready for implementation. At the time, there were the AWIP, which included a couple of policies that needed to be implemented, and there was this document, the WHIS clarifications advisory related to the new ETLDs and the 2013 RAA. So we synchronized the deployment time for those two to be in 6 months from summer. So that's for 15 February, I think. And what we are looking here is the next two pieces that are ready for implementation or close to be ready for implementation are the TIC-WHIS policy implementation and RDAP. And they both seem to have similar timelines that so we could perhaps consider synchronizing the two of them. And also, in the case of TIC-WHIS policy, there are some questions there about the potential legal issues that may difficult having the information passed to the three registries that need to do the migration from TIN to TIC. And there is a potential option in RDAP to use the redirection so that you have the way it will work is the registry will receive the query for the for a specific domain name, and suppose that domain name has not been migrated from the registrar to the registry, then you could in theory use that feature in RDAP to provide a redirection and say the registry will say the information that you're looking for is not here, is over here with the registrar, and then the client will just follow the standard HTTP protocol and will get the information they were looking for just by querying the registry, which is very close to what the TIC-WHIS policy is recommending. Another thing that we may want to discuss is once all registries are TIC, once the migration has been completed for these three GTLDs that are TIC-WHIS, we may need to consider, is there a reason for registrars to offer this service at all, since the information at that time will be available in at the registries and they can provide the information? Is another question that may need to be discussed. And, of course, the last one is how long after we start RDAP deployment for us to consider turning off the port 43 WHIS service. And I believe that's all I had in the presentation. So I will open the floor for questions.
Did you want questions, or do you want answers to your questions?
Both. Any.
Yeah, so I guess you didn't offer any kind of timeline for when you're going to try to move. Do you have any sense, though, of when you're going to offer that timeline for when we will transition to this replacement for WHOIS? I have some other things too, but we'll share around.
So I think that the most interesting thing that we're looking at is potential synchronization of the TIC-WIS policy implementation and the RDAP implementation. So in that sense, supposing once we do the detailed analysis, things indeed are confirmed to be what seems to be now, that there may not be any impact in the timeline, the current timeline that the TIC-WIS policy implementation has, then we were looking at the same timeline that that F4 has, which is in the order of a couple of years.
So I'll offer a comment here too to add to something. One of the things that's interesting to me is the requirements currently that the WHOIS service be on the same server accessible, especially during as the registrar site for registries, the website that they have to put up for registrars. That's part of PDT right now anyway, one of the requirements. So I just offer that to you as something to be aware of and be concerned about, since obviously you can't run both of these things on the same server, physical server, since they're going to be on the same port.
Actually, you could, but yeah, it's a good point. But I think you could do differentiation based on the type of the MIME type, I guess. And we are getting into too much detail, I guess.
Yeah. Well, if you do that, you're forcing a particular implementation. Then you're forcing registries to implement things in a certain way. And frankly, you know, we didn't like the idea that we had to put them back onto the Bolt server in the first place when they forced us to do it for new GTLDs, because, you know, that's, as a large infrastructure, that's not the way we do things. You know, different services are on different constellations of machines, and that's obviously the way that one prefers to do these kinds of things. So I appreciate that technically the solution is possible, but I would encourage you to ask around and consider and get some other advice and comments about that before committing to that.
Yeah, point taken. I think this could be part of the discussions about developing the operational profile. And I remember we could even use the bootstrapping mechanism to define, so that the registry will identify what's the server that is being used for this service. So I think we have options, certainly.
Hello. My name is Greg Aaron. So when we make the transition, the registries and the registrars will implement as per the contracts. But other things will start to break out there, which are all of the websites and applications that use WHOIS protocol now. And so working with the rest of the world will be really important. And we should start thinking about how to convey the change through outreach, and make sure that the rest of the world knows about the open source and so forth, because at some point things are going to break and people will not be able to get the information they need. So how much do we know about how many implementations are out there and who we need to reach out to?
Do you mean RDAP implementations or current WHOIS implementation? Yeah. Good point. I don't know.
We have a comment from a remote participant, Mark Blanchett. In the timeline, there is also some time needed for IANA to implement the Bootstrap registries and their related backend processes. In parentheses, minor but may not be ready the next day the RFC is published.
Yes, good comment. Thank you. Chris?
Thank you very much. My name is Chris Dillon, and I'm co-chair of the Translation and Transliteration of Contact Information Policy Development Process Working Group. And I heard you talking about internationalization.
That's a way cooler title than mine, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I was quite worried I was going to stumble as I said that. It is quite a mouthful. I was interested to hear you speaking about internationalization, and even more pleased to hear the word UTF-8 being used. And basically, one of the things that the group has discovered is that, you know, as you would expect, there is quite a strong demand for the input of contact information in the non-Latin scripts. Now, there is also a possibility, and we are measuring how large that is, there is some demand, and we are still measuring, that you would have not only, and I'll use Japanese as an example because that's easier for me. So, for example, if you had a Japanese address, there is some demand. Well, basically, the idea would be that it would go in Japanese script. There is some demand that would also be transformed, so that could either be transliterated or translated into ASCII. So at that point, you get issues about, well, okay, you know, which is the main form of the contact information? Is it the original or is it the transformed version? To cut a long story short, we have a bit of a need to be able to relate more than one address. And so the question is, basically, is there some way within the protocol or some other way of doing that?
The short answer is undoubtedly yes. The question really is, did we get it right at the starting gate? So if I would invite you to look at the registry that we're creating of the fields that can be returned as part of a whois answer, and if the fields that are present in the registry, in the proposed registry, cover your case, then great. If they don't, then it is easy to register additional fields that could be returned and say, if I understand the problem, you would want to say, here is the Japanese form of the address and here is a one of the trans words formed to the address, and we would return both of them, and the client would have the option to decide which one it would render. Something like that.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Okay.
And on top of that, you would also need to have some kind of method for indicating, for example, when the data were put in, because, for example, if you find that you've got English data that was put in 3 years ago and then your Japanese data is very recent, it could be that the English data is actually a representation of an earlier address. So that sort of issue would also need to be addressed.
I'm fairly certain that what's in there now is just sort of a general, the last time this record was updated in any manner type of timestamp. You could add a timestamp, a second timestamp that indicates this piece of the record was updated at this time, this piece was updated at this time. The data are structured, and so you could just define it. You can extend it however you like.
Okay.
So if the current, if the initial version doesn't sort of suit your needs, then come back to us with, here's what you need to add to get to where we need to be, and it's a short document process. I shouldn't make that promise, but it is one document process.
Thank you very much for that offer.
Yeah, so just Jim Galvin again from Afilias, just to add to that too, but Francisco, you had put up there, the idea of creating an RDAP profile along the way, and I think that addressing these needs and these requirements would have to occur during that period of time, and hopefully the working group that Chris is co-chair of will be done by then, and this particular need will all be documented and laid out. So there are some things to align as part of deploying this if we want to. Otherwise, there's going to be an update along the way.
Yeah, on Francisco here, I will envision that that profile will have to be updated as new policies are developed to account for the new things that are added. But yes, I agree.
Okay, so jumping in. On the question of, I just want to say once for the record, I mean, I'm sure you know this, but for the purposes of the record, your question up there about when do turn off, who is deployment, you know, if you roll out RDAP. So one of the things that's interesting, obviously, is RDAP is completely backward compatible with Whois. So the transition, since Greg Aaron had earlier, was identifying that a lot of people use Whois and a lot of kinds of applications and services. A fairly long transition period would be possible because you could certainly take an RDAP response and strip it down and turn it into a Whois thing to push back out the door. It's just worth observing that that's there. So there's no forced timeline to turn it off. We can do that at whatever seems to make the most sense.
Just to clarify, I guess you didn't mean to say that it's backwards compatible because they are completely different protocols. I think what you meant is that it's easy to have a proxy, right? any other questions or comments in the floor? Nope. One more.
Jim, again, should registrars continue to offer Whois services? I would think, I don't know why they would have to, except in the context of how long would you offer Whois services if you roll out RDAP. I'm sure that registrars would be pleased to not have to do that anymore, but far be it for me to speak for them. So, but I would think turning it off would be a good thing. You know, just as quick as we can, as soon as we get to thick Whois.
We have another comment from Mark Blanchett, a remote participant. The capability of supporting multiple I-18 and data in RDAP has been reviewed during the study on I-18 and registration data.
The I-18... we're referring to internationalization, by the way. Okay, any more comments? No? Well, thank you very much. With this, we close the session. Mm-hmm.